book is so beautiful. It's really a work of art. How long did it take you to put this all together?
Oh, Anne, thank you so much. It was 13 months, and it was like, I don't know how long elephants are in gestation, baby elephants, but it's kind of like a little baby elephant. But it was a lot of fun, and I had some great help. I have a wonderful friend in Oklahoma. Her name is Kim, and she just she was right by my side every day.
It really helps to have someone with you when you're starting to give birth on a project like this, doesn't it?
Oh, you have to. You can't do it alone. You know, there are so many little things. You get so close to it, and you can't see the forest for the trees. So you have to have somebody else there, you know, just kind of, you know, look at being your second or third set of eyes. And then because you know exactly what you want to say, sometimes you don't say what you need to in directions or, you know, certain areas of preparation because you assume.
Oh, that's true.
Yeah. So it's nice to have someone that says, okay, I don't know what you mean by this. And then there are other times when, you know, my brain is just on overdrive and I put, you know, 2 pounds of chicken backs and I mean 2 pounds of chicken thighs. It's like, Kim, she called me. She goes, do you really mean you're using chicken backs? I went, No. Thighs.
We're talking with Allie Phillips, author of Allie's Kitchen. This is a brand new book that's out there, A Passport for Adventurous Palates. Now, you've got a little bit of an accent going on there, and from the dedication that I read at the beginning of your book, your roots in cooking go way, way back to your childhood, don't they?
Oh, they go all the way back to when I was born and raised in southern Appalachia in a little pocket called Mann, West Virginia. So, yes, I'm a mountain girl, so I got that mountain twang, and I've lived in South Carolina for decades now, so I've got a little bit of a southern drawl, too.
Just a little. Well, I know where Mann is. I worked in Charleston for a while.
So get out of here.
Yeah.
That is amazing. Yes. Charleston was, you know, not too far, but getting there wasn't easy back then. It was over Kelly Mountain, and it was treacherous, especially in the winter.
It was. Going back to your dedication, you thank a lot of people, but each dedication is so personal. You can tell they really had an impact on your life.
They did. There are quite a few special women who paved the way for me, and I learned so much from them. Each and every one was really instrumental in my life, and they left a footprint on my heart that will, you know, is there forever. So you can't do something like this. You don't get to where you are after so many years of living just by yourself.
No.
It takes a village to raise a child. Well, it takes a heck of a big village to raise an adult.
Doesn't it, though? You go back to, from your press release, it talks about your hippie roots.
Right.
And you have a lot of the 60s were a strong impact on your cooking. What sort of foods were you eating in the 60s versus what you're eating now?
Well, that's kind of, you know, interesting, because back in the 60s, you know, when I was in college and all, you know, I was eating either dorm food, your little hot burner, or eating. I was in a sorority, so we had these formal meals, you know, every evening during the week. So it was a little different then. I think my first really adventures in eating came when I went to Europe when I was about 19.
Mm.
And I went for the summer, and then that just opened me up beyond what I had seen and experienced growing up in West Virginia. I ate a lot of good, rustic, healthy peasant food growing up. My mother was Croatian, so we had a garden, and she canned, and And during the summer, there were corn shucking events, and we would, you know, pick beans and tomatoes, and of course, everything was made from scratch.
You didn't
have a lot of processed foods. So, but she also cooked a lot of her ethnic Croatian dishes, you know, cabbage rolls, strniki, strukli. There was a cheesecake that was just amazing. So those things kind of gave me that adventurous feel. And then I had two sisters, and we lived in this little teeny house. My mom was a single mom. There were four of us. And so our playground was either the mountains behind us, you know, when the weather was good, and then when it was bad, it was up in the attic, the teeny little attic that we had, that probably, you know, on days when it was warm and not, you know, raining, got up to, you know, 90 degrees, but we were up there. We were going to all these places, you know, putting blankets on things.
Oh, yeah.
And rugs, and just dreaming of flying off to exotic places.
So how did that influence the recipes that you've chosen for Allie's Kitchen?
Oh, gosh, it influenced everything from the ingredients I chose, the spices, the herbs, the blends, to actually the plating and the design. It's so much fun. I feel like I'm playing with paper dolls or something when I'm preparing food and deciding how I'm going to plate it, and even down to what the serving piece is going to be like. Is it going to, be sitting on a piece, a brown paper bag? When I go to the grocery store, you know, I take my reusable bags, but I love to get the old brown paper bags because I use those as kind of like, you know, I fold them up and use them as hot plates. On the table. So it influenced everything.
Well, if we really do eat with our eyes first, I think your book is going to help me gain about 20 pounds just thumbing through it. It is really a beautiful piece of work. And, I mean, right down to the cover of the book, what caught my eye right away was that old radio you've got sitting there.
I am so glad you noticed that.
That
was my mother's, and we had that all the way back to West Virginia. And talk about turning on the radio stations and doing the mashed potatoes and the twist in the little living room and, you know, playing the music. You know, it would crackly come through on the radio because we were in Maine, and I think the closest radio station was either Huntington or Charleston. Mm-hmm. There may have been one in Logan. But, yeah, that was Mom's, and she used it up until the day she died. And that whole setting you see on the front cover is actually just, it was literally thrown together by a couple of my girlfriends and me. It's in my yard, and we just pulled things from my house, pillows from the sofa and, you know, decorative pillows and tablecloths, and we hung them on trees. It was like being in the attic again. It was so much fun.
You built your own fort outside.
We built our own fort outside, yes, and we even had clothespins. I have another girlfriend that her she's Italian, and she saved all of her mother's old clothespins from decades ago, back in the, you know, 50s and 60s, and so we used those clothespins. So everything had some kind of meaning here on this photograph. It was not professionally staged. This is us playing in the yard again.
Well, that only makes it more personal for you and for everyone that picks up the book. Tell me about your concept of food branching. What's that all about?
Well, I think food is more than just what you see and what you eat right there on the plate. And there are three aspects of food branching. There's one called bohoing. I mean, if you have leftovers, if you want to substitute something, how can you boho it to make it your own? I tell people, my recipes are simply inspiration for you to jump off the edge and do what you want to do. I like to give people the freedom and the uniqueness to make the recipes their own. You know, it's a blueprint. Then there are food styling, and a lot of people kind of they can make wonderful food, but then when it comes to how do you serve it, how do you style it, because it can be delicious, but it may not portray or look as delicious as it is just because of what it's outfitted in. So almost like getting dressed for a party or an event or a prom, you want to style it. And then the mood making is how, if we are going to be having something that's Middle Eastern, how can we extend that and just kind of set the mood? This weekend I did an event in Charlotte. It was a private party, and the really hip condo, they were millennials, young 20 and 30 year olds, about 12 of them. And but I was working with the gal that lives there, and I said, do you have any, your scarves, your blankets, let's pull those out. And those became the tablecloths and designing pieces, along with candles and old mason jars. I had brought a lot of herbs from my garden, rosemary, basil, fresh mint, and because we had several Middle Eastern things that I was doing. And it was just beautiful. It was just absolutely beautiful. You can check it out on Instagram.
Oh, most definitely. While we're going down that route, I don't mean to interrupt you, but let's let everybody know, if they want to know you better, get to know you better, where they can reach you as far as Instagram and Twitter and Facebook and all of that.
Well, I am on most all of the major social media.
Okay.
I'm on Instagram, Pinterest, Facebook, and it's all Allie's Kitchen. And then my website is allieskitchen.com. So there are links to all of the other social media there, like Flipboard and me and, the different places you'll find me.
Nice. Now, did we finish the discussion here on food branching? I want to make sure I didn't cut you off on that.
We did. We finished the one on the mood making. Yes.
So I love that.
Three types of food branching, because food is... It's the trunk, and then all the branches just come out, and there are so many things that you can do. So that was fun to create that concept, and I think people really like it because, they don't sometimes think, well, maybe I can just serve this, nice flank steak on the carving board that I just sliced it on.
Sure.
Why do I have to put it on a platter?
Oh, absolutely. We've got to start thinking more outside the box and not be afraid of playing with our food again.
That's right. And it's a playground. And that's what that's another thing that I share with people. Hey, this is our playground. And we'll share toys, we'll share games, and we'll share fun. And we'll just make eating more of a experience than just, the nutritional aspect of it, where it becomes a whole evening event. The Saturday night event with the millennials started at 6, and the last people left after midnight.
Mm.
I mean, it was a total evening of food and laughter and getting them involved, and they were so amazingly interested and engaged and invested in what I was showing them. And then they were just so surprised that, my gosh, this is so easy. I watched you. This is easy.
Well, that's good. That's good to know that they actually became vested in their own party. Now, I was going to ask you, there's 240 recipes in this book. Now, these are the successful ones. What about the ones that didn't make it into the books, the failures that just make you shake your head and say, oh, what was I thinking?
Oh, I've had a lot of those too. At one time, I tried to make peanut butter cornbread, and I thought, oh, I tasted it and I went, look. I mean, I almost choked on it. There have been a lot of flops, but it's experimentation. That's the process of it.
Sure.
The biryani in there, it took me over a week, and I think I made it 12 times. It was like, no, I'm going to do it again. The rice didn't turn out like I wanted it to. No, I'm going to do it again. So, it's over and over and over. And part of my quest with this cookbook was to make the recipes easy, the ingredients accessible, because I want everybody to be able to jump on this magic carpet and eat globally. And if the ingredients are hard to source, or they're extremely expensive, or the how-to is intimidating, people aren't going to do it.
Yeah.
So if you're in Eufaula, Oklahoma, or Paintsville, Kentucky, or wherever, I want you to be able to open this cookbook and say, I can do this.